ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hugh Integrity, splashdown, sending post-landing command now.
Back on Earth, safe and sound.
Copy splashdown, waiting on VLDR.
The Artemis II astronauts splashed down today
after their historic trip around the moon. I'm science reporter Jacinta Bowler.
And I'm Belinda Smith. This is Artemis Explained, a daily podcast about the Artemis II mission to and from the moon
for Science Friction on ABC Radio National.
From the pages of Jules Verne to a modern-day mission to the moon, a new chapter of the exploration of our celestial neighbor is complete. Integrity's astronauts, back on Earth.
All right, Jacinta, we've made it. This is our final mission in under a minute. It's been a big day.
We did it.
Not yet. We haven't done it yet.
Okay.
But you're about to. Go.
Okay. So the astronauts woke up to Run to the Water by Live. We love it. That's very fitting. How good. They all got into their orange suits this morning. The crew module separated from the rest of Orion. And then they did their 13 minutes through the atmosphere and they landed safely at 10.07 a.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time. Now that they've landed, I can say that this has been a really, really successful mission. They've done a really good job. The team have been using the word textbook a lot when talking about the landing and the whole mission, to be honest. This has been just incredible that this has gone so well. NASA have said that the astronauts are in excellent condition. There were a few comms issues with the pickup team soon after splashdown, but they did manage to get safely picked up onto the front porch, winched up via a helicopter, and then onto the boat.
This was a textbook entry and a textbook touchdown for Integrity. Reid Wiseman, Victor Glover, Christina Cook, and Jeremy Hansen back on Earth after a journey around the moon.
It's funny you say NASA used the word textbook a lot. Something else that you hear a lot during these conferences or even just with mission control is people using the words nominal and not nominal, which just means things are going as planned and not nominal is things aren't going as planned.
But nominal's bad, yeah.
Lots of nominal chat during this 10-day mission. So they've splashed down. How did it feel for you, Jacinta? We've been so immersed in this mission for the last 10 days. What were you feeling as you watched the astronauts land safely on Earth?
I care so much about these astronauts. Hey, so during the blackout, I was really nervous because obviously you don't get any updates from them. You're kind of just waiting, hoping that everything's okay.
So what was the blackout again? Remind me what happened there.
There was 6 minutes where they were out of action, where they, because the spacecraft gets so hot when it enters the atmosphere that there's plasma surrounding it, and that actually causes communication issues. So they don't have any communication. They don't have any visuals of the astronauts except from on the ground. So we were seeing like a tiny little pinprick as it was coming in towards Earth. Six minutes of that. Once that was finished, you could see them, the parachutes deployed. It was beautiful. And then the bit that really got me was the moment that they touched the water and you could see that water rippling out. That was beautiful. I think I gasped. It was a really wonderful moment.
I have to admit, I got a bit teary as they were coming down. Before splashdown even, it was when we could see some of the parachutes had deployed and you could see they were coming down through the clouds and you could see the water rippling in the sunlight underneath them and it looked so familiar. It was Earth and they were home and you could see that they were just so close to the very, very end of their part of the mission. It was, I did tear up a little bit.
It's a big deal, yeah. I mean, this is the first time that anyone's done this for over 50 years. I think we're allowed to be a little teary.
And the initial, you can hear it, jubilation here in the flight control room. The first crew member is out of Integrity.
I've been hearing from some of my friends as well and other people who have described feeling a sort of similar emotion, just a real overwhelming joy, I guess, with a fair chunk of relief in there as well.
Yeah.
Someone, I was on local radio earlier and someone texted in saying that they were driving as the landing happened and she had to pull over because she burst into tears.
And fair enough. I think that is a completely reasonable reaction.
I think so too. Okay, so just tell me a little bit about how this textbook re-entry and splashdown went.
Yeah, so they came in a little slower than expected. We're still waiting on the exact numbers, but before the launch, NASA said that it would be coming in at 39,688 kilometers per hour. That's about 165 kilometers short of the record set by Apollo 10 in 1969.
Oh, we can't break all the records, I suppose. Got to leave some for someone else to do later.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. You're so right. So the full mission lasted 9 days, 1 hour, 32 minutes and 15 seconds. But we've been talking about this. I actually think that the mission is still going because I think if they're sitting in the capsule for an hour, then they have to get on a helicopter. I think that until you get a warm bed, the mission can still be going for those astronauts.
I reckon so. And the mission will keep going for all the engineers who need to take apart the capsule and the scientists who are analysing all the data that they have yet to get their hands on. So it's not over. Definitely not.
You're so right.
All right. Tell me, how are the astronauts doing?
Yes, the astronauts are doing well. There was comms problems soon after splashdown, and you could hear Reed on the mic, and he was just, you could tell that he was getting a little frustrated because he couldn't get on to the recovery team to be able to communicate with them directly.
Oh, no.
So they were going through Houston, so it was like, Reed was like, can you tell them that I can't hear them, but they can hear me?
And Houston, if you could relay to recovery that we hear them, but it does not appear as though they are hearing us.
Sounds like some of the tech problems we have here in the ABC.
Yeah, all the time. But so the water was a little bit choppy, so it took a while to get set up. They opened the hatch up. They got that first breath of air. The four medics went into the capsule to check them all out. The term they use is all green. So that means there was four greens. So all of the astronauts were safe and healthy, which is exactly what you want.
We are stable one, four green crew members.
We also heard from Lily Villarreal, Artemis Landing and Recovery Director.
When we opened the hatch, they were already out of their seats, having a good time, waiting for us to open the hatch. And they opened the hatch, and of course, we did the first medical assessment. Everybody was doing very well. And they were just having such a great time with the medical team that was inside the capsule. I think they were all taking selfies with the phones that they have, probably talking about what they saw. And it was just smiles all around. They were having such a great time.
About an hour after splashdown, they were placed on the front porch. So that's that little orange boat that the astronauts wait on. And then eventually they were individually winched up via helicopter. And then they were taken over to the ship USS John P. Murtha.
And here we go. Second astronaut now off the front porch, getting hoisted into the second helicopter.
That helicopter part of the journey, it was quite bizarre to me.
Yeah.
Like they've just come back to Earth on a spaceship and then they're kind of hoiked up, joined on to another person, part of the recovery team, in a harness and just flying across the ocean. You just think the human body is not designed for these kinds of forces. Like we're just this bag of liquid and bones and they've just done the most extraordinary journey, and then we don't put them on a nice gentle ocean cruiser. No, we dangle them from the bottom of a helicopter and take them to another boat.
Absolutely. Yeah, I can imagine going from like very little gravity to like lots of gravity probably doesn't feel amazing, but hopefully now that they've arrived, hopefully there's no more helicopters for them in the next few months.
Now the only person left on the front porch, Commander Reed Wiseman.
We've actually got a question from Huxley, who's 7 years old, who asks, can the astronauts walk right after they get out of the water?
Yeah, so we were trying to work out if they would. I assumed that they wouldn't, because after you get out of space gravity, you do kind of have to readjust to walking again. But we watched them. They walked away from the helicopter pad looking pretty good. They had a wheelchair at the ready behind them that none of the astronauts used.
And here we go. We're seeing Jeremy walking, waving across the flight deck, now on his way to the medical bay.
Now, keep in mind, when we think about other astronaut missions where this has happened before, most of this is from longer ISS missions. So when people are in space for, more than 10 days.
Like months, perhaps.
Exactly. Months, sometimes a year if they're staying there for a really long time. But once they come back, astronauts often feel dizzy, lightheaded, nauseous, and off balance upon their return. And this can actually last days. So they need to get back what's called land legs. So they need to readjust to being in Earth conditions. So other astronauts have said stuff like their neck gets tired from holding up their head, or their feet have pins and needles from having to use them. So it is quite a lot to get used to again after being in low gravity.
So our four astronauts, they've landed, they're regaining their land legs. What happens next?
So they've been taken to the ship, USS John P. Murtha. They did some evaluations on there, and that ship has taken them back to land. And now they're back on land. They'll board an aircraft back to Houston. Then when they're there, they'll undertake plenty of recovery work over the next couple of weeks to make sure they're okay after the mission. They'll obviously be doing those tests that we talked about in the science episode as well, getting those final blood tests and things like that now that they've come back to Earth. And then I really hope they get to take a well-deserved holiday because these guys have been doing a lot of work.
Actually, we've had a question from Hugo, who's 4 years old, and he'd like to know, how do they get the Orion capsule out of the ocean? And what happens to it after it's been recovered?
Yeah, so this is very important. So obviously the astronauts are the biggest priority. They need to get off first, but they do actually collect all of that other stuff as well. The capsule itself gets put onto the boat and brought back to land for engineers to take apart and analyze, including, obviously, the toilet.
The most important aspect, I would say.
We need to work out what went wrong there. They also try and pick up the parachutes. So anything that's in the water that they count as debris, they do try and get access to it. It is helpful for science, but also you don't want to be leaving too much stuff in the ocean, but sometimes things will go under the water. So if it's currently on the bottom of the ocean, they're not going to be able to pick it up.
That's where it stays. Okay, so we've had some, as usual, excellent listener questions, and we've got one from Amanda who was emailing from England. And she asks, do you know why it is hotter re-entering the Earth's atmosphere than when the shuttle went up to space? And then she says, thank you. And she's been listening to the podcast with her boys, August and Ashton.
Aww. Thanks for listening. All the way from England. How wonderful. Okay, so there's a couple of reasons why it's the case. The first is that there's a lot more stuff protecting the capsule. So there's a whole rocket surrounding it. You don't just have this tiny little module. You've got a whole rocket there. The second is because when they're going up, they're actually going quite a bit slower. So I couldn't find the numbers for Artemis 2, but on Artemis 1, so that's the uncrewed mission that was quite similar to the one we're seeing now, at launch, the spaceship was going around 28,000 kilometers per hour at its fastest. And the Orion capsule, when it came back, it was traveling at around about 40,000 kilometers when it re-entered Earth's atmosphere. So much faster.
Right. Okay. And just being faster means that when it hits the molecules in the atmosphere, that friction is just so much higher.
Absolutely. Yeah. Mm. So it, because it's faster, it gets hotter.
And we've got a question related to speed from Jenny, who asks, if spacecraft like Artemis are returning to Earth at such enormous velocity and generate tremendous heat as they re-enter Earth's atmosphere, why not do a few laps of the Earth to bleed off speed and even use the craft's engine to slow the vehicle down before re-entry and have a slower, less dangerous fall through the atmosphere? Great question.
So slowing down on re-entry requires a lot of fuel. So that would mean they would have to have more fuel on liftoff, and everything gets very heavy very fast. But actually, interestingly, the heat shield issue, when they did Artemis 1, they came back in and kind of skipped, right? They kind of slowed themselves down using the atmosphere. So they went down a bit and then went back up again, kind of similar to what you're talking about. But the heat shield, the issue there is that they didn't want to have the heat shield going through too much of this really high heat for too long. And so instead of doing that, they decided faster is better, even if it's hotter, because it's less stress on the heat shield. So they're trying to get through as fast as possible and then slow down via the parachutes instead of going round a few times and potentially damaging the heat shield before they do that real important entry point.
Now, we have a question from Elodie, who's 6, and she'd like to know, why do spacecraft land in the ocean?
Another good question. We've had some bangers today. Okay, so they haven't always. During the Apollo missions, there were splashdowns, so quite similar to what we're seeing today. The International Space Station, a lot of the time, actually, they come down in Soyuz capsules, and these Soviet-designed craft actually land on land, usually somewhere in the deserts of Kazakhstan in Central Asia. NASA returned to splashdowns in 2019 when it transitioned to using SpaceX Dragon capsules. It's unclear which one is safest. We've actually had more Earth landings than splashdowns, thanks to Soyuz. The positive of a splashdown, though, is that it's easier to aim for water because there's just so much of it. So there's definitely pros and cons to both.
And finally, this is from Danielle, who says, this mission has had so many amazing feel-good and incredible moments, from naming the moon crater after Commander Reed Wiseman's late wife, to the awe-inspiring photos of the dark side of the moon, to the Outlook issue and toilet problems. Why do you two think this mission has captured the hearts and minds of so many people? Any tips on how to face the reality that we will all soon have to farewell our emotional support astronauts and these amazing views from space? Asking for a friend.
I think I'm going to be just as devastated to lose my emotional support astronauts as everybody else. This has been a real crazy 10 days for us and for the astronauts, of course.
I mean, they've had a time, I suppose. But won't someone think of us? The podcasters.
Very important people. I think this has been an incredible, incredible mission. And I didn't think that I would be quite as emotional about it as I am. You kind of, as a journalist, you're always a bit skeptical, but this has been really, really wonderful.
I think the fact that Danielle called the astronauts emotional support astronauts really speaks to why this mission has really captured the hearts and minds of so many people. It's because we could go on the journey with them, really. We got to hear about the mundane parts of life in space, as well as the more exciting aspects, I suppose. We got to hear from them with just a couple of seconds delay of what they were feeling as they looked at the moon from such a close position. We got to hear them discover surprise coffee on their last day in space. You know, we got to watch them as they washed their face and drank their, you know, their tea or whatever it was. It really feels like we got to go along with them. And for people who weren't alive during the Apollo missions, like my parents were teenagers at the time, it's just a whole new world that's opened up to us, this strange place called space where these people have experienced it and shared it with the world and been so generous as well with it. This is not the end of the mission. Sure, they're back, but there is plenty more science to come. And of course, there's going to be Artemis 3.
Yeah. Well said, Belle. That's beautiful.
Oh, thank you. Well, if you have something to say to us, you can still email us at sciencefriction@abc.net.au. Now, Jacinta and I are going to take a couple of days off, but we'll be back in a few days when we know more about how the astronauts are going, answer some more of your questions, and hopefully, Jacinta, you'll have kicked your cold by then.
We've had a great time, but I'm definitely ready for a few days.
You and me both. This episode was made on the lands of the Wurundjeri and Gadigal people and produced by Shelby Traynor. What a legend. I'm Belinda Smith.
And I'm Jacinta Bola. Over and out.
For now.